Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this Friday, July 19th, 2024. I have your host, James J. Mailoff, with you. At 4:30 today, we're going to welcome in Lacey Ayling, Events and Engagement Director with our Heart of Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce. But joining us right now on the phone, Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston is with us right now. Sir, too many S's. Struggle with that one. I apologize. But we do appreciate the time, as always, sir. And you're actually just getting wrapping up with something really fun over there.
Yeah, so I just left Fort McCoy, so they had their change of command ceremony. So after 2 years, Colonel Stephen Messenger relinquished his command over to the incoming Fort McCoy commander, Colonel Shayla Baez Ramirez. And it's always great to get on Fort McCoy because it has such an incredible impact in western Wisconsin. And this be part of that ceremony, it really is a unique experience, and certainly wish Colonel Messenger a best wishes on his next deployment, where he'll be teaching at the War College out in Pennsylvania. So he's been a great partner to work with over the last 2 years, and I look forward to working with a new post commander.
You've done a number of things like this over the years and in your time in the Senate, sir, but I have to imagine it every time it hits the heart, every time it means something more doing being a part of something like that.
Well, absolutely. And again, hats off to our brave men and women who volunteer to serve in our armed forces. And, Fort McCoy certainly has a unique footprint. It is the gem of our Army Reserves where, every year they train upwards of 70,000 troops from around the country that come in. And it really is a state-of-the-art facility. And if anyone gets the opportunity to take a tour, I strongly encourage it because it's one of those that, I don't think a lot of people think about unless you've actually been on there, but it does have a tremendous economic impact for our state, roughly $4 billion annually. And, we want to do everything we can to support the installation and their mission, which is to prepare our troops for any engagement or any sort of relief mission that may arise.
One of the things I respect and appreciate about our friendship, our conversations on the air, they're always transparent, on air, off air. You and I treat each other the same. And even if we don't agree on something, we treat each other like adults and with respect. And we don't shy away from things. So almost a week ago now, it's crazy to think of with the political way these things go and the timeline of things and 24/7 news cycles and everything. But we're almost a week removed from the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. This is the first time our country has really faced something like this since Ronald Reagan back in 1981. Your thoughts on what happened last Saturday, sir?
I was absolutely stunned and shocked and horrified, but at the same time relieved that President Trump survived an assassination attempt. In fact, I had just gotten home from a parade over in Juneau County, and I was down in my basement office when one of my colleagues had sent me the clip, and my stomach dropped. And immediately I ran upstairs and was glued to the TV. And, it is no question in my mind, an absolute miracle that President Trump is still with us today. And unfortunately, though, that can't be said for the firefighter, the father that we lost, and the two that were critically injured. But thankfully, for law enforcement and the Secret Service that were right there next to the president, they did their jobs remarkably and protected him. And it just goes to show that, every day on this earth is a gift, and it's amazing how just one subtle movement could have changed the course of U.S. history. And it's I'm glad he's okay, but this really is a moment and an opportunity for us to realize that while we do have political differences in this country and while we are polarized, this is one of these moments where I think we need to gauge the temperature, tone down the rhetoric, focus on the issues and not the politics of personality. And always remember that while we can have political differences, we settle those differences at the ballot box, not with violence.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Andrew Jackson in 1835, of course, Lincoln in 65, Kennedy in 63, and as I mentioned, Reagan in 81. This isn't the first time our country has dealt with this, but one thing that we have shown after these incidences is an ability to unify. an ability to come together where maybe we weren't as close before. And I'm a huge, huge believer in silver linings in life. And if there is even a slight chance of us being a little less divided and a little more unified, that is one silver lining we can take from this situation. We can't change the situation. It happened. But we can choose how we handle it coming out afterwards. And of course, this happening right on the cusp of the RNC, and we have wrapped it up by now with the RNC in Milwaukee. I want to segue into that, sir. Did you, I know what I saw, but I don't, this isn't about me and my opinions or thoughts. I'm curious from you, not only what we saw on the TV screen or anything, but behind the scenes and among your colleagues, are you hearing unity among the Republican Party or unity politically, unity as a country?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think what we saw play out at the RNC is that this is a new Republican Party. And while there have been different factions and divisions within the party, I saw something that I haven't seen in a very long time, where the unification, where we realized that, you know, we're all in this together. And I think Trump echoed this last night, talking about while we have differences, we have one common theme and one common denominator, and that's we're all Americans. And, you know, I think he's definitely been changed by this experience based on just my observations. And I think he did a decent job of laying out a vision on where this country could go when we work together, and even calling on Democrats, realizing that while we have different ways of advancing how we want to have our nation progress, there are certain areas where I think we can find common ground. And I'm always reminded of that quote by Bill Clinton in his inaugural address in 1992, that there is nothing wrong with America that cannot be fixed by what is right with America. And I still believe that holds true today. And my hope is, now that we've concluded the RNC convention and we await what's going to happen at the DNC convention in Chicago, that we can really start talking about the issues again and get away from the politics of personal destruction and let this be a competition between the two parties and their two visions. And then no matter what comes in November, when the dust settles, as I've often said before, it's time to put back on our policy caps and roll up our sleeves and do what's best for the people we represent, both at the national and state level.
One of the things I feel like gets lost in the political cycle oftentimes, especially as we get this close to November, is yes, you are voting for these individuals, but you're not just voting for the individual. These people don't do the job themselves. They've got a lot of people in their cabinet, a lot of people that they bring in. You're not just voting for a particular person, but the particular people that they will hire and bring into the fold. And we saw some of those people at the RNC this week. What are some of the highlights to you? Did you get a chance to take in any of the events or any of that?
I was actually down Monday night for an event down in Milwaukee. It wasn't at the Pfizer Forum, but it was for RSLC, which is a Republican Leadership Legislative Campaign Committee. And, you know, got to meet with some of my colleagues from different states around the country. And I think by and large, what we're seeing play out is that, you know, we understand and we hear it on the ground day in and day out, especially right now, as individuals such as myself and others are going out and talking to voters directly at their doorstep, is that, you know, there are some significant challenges right now. People's earnings have been eaten up with inflation. There's concern with our southern border. I mean, when fentanyl is now the number one cause of death for young people ages 18 to 35, that's startling. And I think a lot of people recognize is that we can do better and we need to do better as a country. And, you know, based on what I heard from some of these speakers, that those were themes that were echoed throughout. I mean, inflation's a real deal. In fact, not that long ago, I was going door to door in Wisconsin Rapids and had a conversation with a wonderful woman who still works, is on a fixed income, and literally told me that there are days that she has to make the decision, do you put gas in your tank so you can get to work, or do you put food on the table? Regardless of what anyone's politics are, I think we can all agree that in 2024, that's just unacceptable. And so my hope is that as the campaigns continue to progress, both at the national level and the state level, that we can continue to go out there and lay out a positive vision on where our state and where our country can go, which is really to lift all people up, regardless of their socioeconomic backgrounds, and provide opportunities and really put our country back on the right track and do what we can to get out of this malaise that so many people have been in over the last couple of years. And I think we can do better, and we are going to do better.
We're speaking with Wisconsin State District 24 Representative Senator Patrick Testin. And sir, you've been making the rounds in that district. How has that been going? What are some of the things that you have been hearing and highlights you've seen?
It's been great. I honestly, you know, it's funny if you were to ask some of my other colleagues what their least favorite thing is about the campaign season, oftentimes you'll hear them say going door to door, but I've always enjoyed it. In fact, yesterday I walked about 10 miles going door to door in Jackson County and Alma Center and Marillion, and these being new parts of the district under the newly enacted maps, I enjoy it because it's an opportunity to go out there and meet new individuals, meet new constituents, and really to hear what's on their mind. And like I just mentioned, a lot of what I'm hearing is that, you know, people are concerned that their dollar doesn't go as far as it once did. People are tapping into their savings and their 401ks to get by. And so I think anything that we can do moving forward to provide tax relief to individuals is going to be a main priority for us going into the next biennium. But then also, again, making sure that in our rural areas that we're doing what we can to make sure we get our fair share of road funding coming back to our local communities, doing what we can to increase access to rural health care, especially in light and wake of the two hospital closures over in the Eau Claire area. We're feeling those ripple effects in places like Jackson County and others where we just don't have those providers. And we need to do what we can to get more providers into the state of Wisconsin, make it easier for providers outside of the state to practice here in Wisconsin. And those are going to be a lot of things that I'm going to continue to work on if I have the privilege to come back and serve the 24th Senate District come January of next year.
I love a good transition, and you've been setting me up so good so far today. It's great. Appreciate that. And great notes by you. You recently hosted an event to talk about the elections and what it could mean for our health care in Wisconsin. What came of that conversation?
Yeah, so recently I was down in Madison and took part in place with the Wisconsin Health News Network, and we had a panel, healthcare experts, folks from the insurance industry, hospitals, myself, and then my colleague, Senator LaTanya Johnson, a Democrat from Milwaukee. And, you know, a lot of it focused on national issues and trying to project what could or might happen if there's another Trump administration or vice versa, if there's another Biden administration. But I think the key thing is doing what we can to increase access in underserved areas, doing things both at the national and state level to help drive down prices and really empower our providers to operate at the highest level of their license. Now, one theme that continued to pop up on this panel in the conversation, and I thought it was a very good, healthy conversation, is, you know, some of the challenges that we face at the state level as it relates to Medicaid reimbursements. And that's one of the primary reasons why we saw the two hospital closures up in the Eau Claire area is because they had a very heavy Medicaid population, which our Medicaid reimbursement rates are some of the lowest in the country, despite the fact that in the last several budgets, we've made significant increases. And so as we move forward, one of the things that I really want to try and focus on, and we're having these discussions now with myself and a couple of my Senate colleagues in the Joint Finance Committee, along with the Department of Health and Human Services, working with Bill Hanna, our state Medicaid director, is as it relates to the relationship between our long-term care providers and those who operate in the adult daycare space, providing these home-based care models, where really the struggle is that compensation for some of these workers, it's relatively low. And the conversations we're having right now is we need to set a minimum rate band where we have a floor on where these healthcare workers can get compensated. What's happened in the last couple budgets is that we've increased significant, we've put money into the budget, but because of the uncertainty, oftentimes what was meant to go for wage increases are one-time bonuses. So that doesn't provide the certainty needed for these providers to carry out the jobs for our elderly, our disabled, those who need it most. And so my hope is as we gear up for the next state budget, that this is going to be a top of the conversation that we continue, because from my standpoint, it needs to happen. Just given our aging demographics here in the state, especially in our rural areas such as Wood County and others.
You recently presented a legislative citation to Maury Rice for his involvement in establishing the Porter County Legal Aid Society. How did that go?
It was great. So Maury Rice, truly, when you think of a public servant and someone who basically spent his entire law career helping those who needed assistance. He established the Portage County Legal Aid Society 30 years ago, and so we got to present a citation to Maury for all his work. I, alongside Representative Shankland, and really just a public servant, and reflects what's so great about our area here in central Wisconsin, that we're so blessed to have so many people that truly believe in giving back, and Maury is a testament to that. And what was so great when Moore gave his remarks, he now lives in La Crosse and made the trip up, is that he made it a point to thank those who worked alongside him. And it was never about him. It was about helping those who needed it most. Oftentimes, if you need a lawyer, you're probably not in a favorable situation, and you may be going through a lot of things, but he shared a lot of great stories and highlighted some of those cases that were most impactful to him and helping those people that needed it most at a time when they could least afford it. And Maury was there for him.
Also, I don't know how much this was covered, so just wanted to bring attention to this like you did. We want to congratulate the Wisconsin Veterans Museum for receiving an award of excellence for their American Association for the State and Local History for its exhibit Souvenirs of Service, the things they kept. You were able to take in this great exhibit, I from what I understand.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this a while back shortly after I did, but about this time last year, I got to tour our Veterans Museum archives. And again, I didn't know what to expect when I was going, when we set up this tour. I figured, okay, they're going to walk us around. But I immediately was blown away. I learned that we have the third largest Veterans Museum archives in the nation. And it's truly breathtaking seeing regimental banners that were carried in the Civil War that are still riddled with musket balls and every single artifact that they have, which is just shy of 100,000 artifacts, has a story. And they have done a remarkable job over the years of reaching out to veterans to get their oral histories. And it just, I could spend days down there. And I've really, and anyone can go on their website and peruse the archives and see the artifacts themselves online and read the stories behind them. And it's truly remarkable just knowing the fact that Wisconsin veterans going back to the Civil War have been in the thick of it, from Appomattox Courthouse to Gettysburg to D-Day to the Korean War, Vietnam, all the way to our present-day conflicts. And it just really makes you so reflective and so appreciative that, you know, we live in a state where so many individuals have played critical roles in our nation's history and world history.
You recently spent some time at Western Technical College. How did that go?
It was great. I think when you take a look at the technical colleges that I have within my Senate district, Mid-State and Western Tech, these are two examples of great, great institutions that are really putting their best foot forward to not only train up our future workforce, but to also help individuals retool. And again, this was an opportunity for me to go through one of their newer facilities where they've expanded in key areas such as nursing and others, where, again, going back to that healthcare issue, we've got a huge workforce shortage within healthcare. And they are training the next generation of nurses and technicians that are going to help provide some of the best level of healthcare, not just in the state, but in the country. But beyond that, the work that they're doing in the trades, it's really exciting. And it just goes to show that the investments that we have made to help our technical colleges have gone a long way to helping not just those future workers, but our employers in the region, which, again, we continue to struggle with the workforce shortage. You can't go through any community. Right now I'm sitting in Toma and right outside a strip mall, and every single store I'm looking at has a help wanted sign in front of it. So everything that we can do to provide people a pathway and a career, whether it's in the trades, I'm going to continue to be a strong advocate for.
And you know me, this comes up, and I bring up minimum wage. Is this something that you, your colleagues, you think the state will be addressing?
Well, I don't know if we necessarily need to raise a minimum wage at this point, because market demand, even jobs that just 5 years ago, you know, a high school kid that would normally make $7.25 flipping burgers, their first job at a fast food restaurant, are now paying $16, $17, $18 an hour because our employers are starved for workers. And so jobs that were once considered entry level, they're paying considerably higher wages.
But we're putting it on businesses to be in charge of this. And I'm a little weary of that. I hear what you're saying, but I do think that this is one of those cases where this is where we ask of our government to set a standard, to set a tone. There is no mathematician that can make it work where any individual can live on the current minimum wage. If we're asking our businesses to be in charge of this and them to kind of toe the line, it seems like not only a lot to ask of them, but I don't distrust businesses, but I also know that a business is only going to stay alive as much of a profit they can make, so they're going to cut corners where they can. It seems like an issue that our sooner than later, our state is going to have to address. Whether they want to kick the can or not, it's something that is going to have to be addressed one way or another. But it's not going to be solved in the last 2 minutes of our conversation, that's for sure. I did want to jump to your On the Job series before we wrap up. How is that going? Do you have a job coming up?
Well, we're getting some things lined up. It's a little bit more difficult. So there's a quirky little state statute that kind of hinders us for those who are on the ballot this fall, that we're only limited, and you'll probably notice this too, even in our official post on social media, is that we're limited to the number of things that we can actually do from the official standpoint. So we're trying to work around that to see what can be done if I have to transition it to the campaign side until after the election. But we're still getting things lined up, and regardless, it's still something I'm very passionate about. We're going to continue to keep doing, because for me, it is a ton of fun to actually go out there and experience something different for a day, because I can't tell you how many times, just from my On the Job series, when legislation's come up, it gives me a much better perspective on how that impacts. Prime example, when I worked at Duraclean in Wisconsin Rapids last fall, there was a legislation that was introduced that would have made industrial laundries part of the ag and manufacturing tax credit. And at first thought, I thought, there's no way this makes any sense. You know, then I'm going to qualify because I do my own laundry. But having spent the day there, and when you see these uniforms and bar rigs that come in that are absolutely disgusting, thinking there's no chance these are ever going to become clean, and have it walk through that process, it was a no-brainer for me. And that was legislation that ended up becoming law.
Right before my radio days, I worked at a business much like that, G&K here in Rapids. And yeah, you see those uniforms and you don't know how they get cleaned, but somehow it happens. And a big thank you to those kind of workers out there. Before we wrap up, you and I talked about the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. Did want to encourage people to check that out next time you're in Madtown. And you can find out more at wisvetmuseum.com. That's wisvetmuseum.com. Always appreciate the time, sir. Thanks so much for joining us. If people have follow-up questions, want to know more, or just reach out to you, how can they do that?
Yeah, if anyone needs to get a hold of me, feel free to give my office a call at 608-266-3123. Shoot us an email at sen.mylastnameteston@legis.wi.gov. Follow us on social media. And, of course, as everyone knows, it's Wisconsin's favorite season, and I don't mean summer. It's campaign season. I know it's a really bad joke. But if you see me out in the community, feel free to stop me, and we'll be taking our campaign to a door near you soon.
You're a dad. You can tell those jokes. As a father, I know a dad joke when I hear it. We can tell dad jokes. We can get away with it. That was a good one, sir. We appreciate the time. Safe travels out there. Have a great weekend.
Here's all, James.
We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.